Welcome to Brighteon Broadcast News for Friday, August 2nd, 2024. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. And we have a very serious topic to discuss here. We are on the verge of an exploding regional war, maybe a global war situation in the Middle East. And this, of course, stems from the fact that Israel, its government, and I'm not referring to all the people of Israel, I'm not referring to Jews everywhere, that's for sure, because many Jews, most Jews around the world, disagree strongly with what Netanyahu is doing. But the government of Israel believes that it has the right to murder anybody, anywhere, at any time, without cause, without justification, without repercussions of any kind. And Israel murdered Ismail Haniyeh in Tehran, by the way, and, you know, with a cruise missile, in a total violation of international law, just murdered him. And he, of course, was the political leader of Hamas, who was engaged in the negotiation, the so-called negotiation that Israel claimed to be involved in, a negotiation for some kind of peace arrangement, a negotiation to de-escalate the situation into a ceasefire. So you want to know how Israel negotiates? They murder the negotiators. And that tells you everything you need to know about whether they can be trusted to have any sort of goodwill in negotiations. So today, this is going to be a very, perhaps, disturbing episode for all of us. But today we have to cover some very uncomfortable truths about what's happening, and we have to be ready for an irrational, bloodthirsty escalation of war in the Middle East. And we need to, most importantly, we need to start with principles in this, and we need to adhere to those principles and be very clear about what those principles are. So I'm going to bring you some video from Larry Johnson today, who has some very forceful things, very forceful condemnation of Israel's current actions. And I'm also going to bring you some video from an interview with Dustin Nemos, who I interviewed several weeks ago, and with whom I don't agree with everything he says, by the way, just want to be clear. But today I'm going to show you some of the contra voices, contra to what the United States Congress is doing. Because most of the U.S. Congress applauds Netanyahu with standing ovations, even though Netanyahu is objectively a mass murderer, a war criminal, according to the ICC, and is engaged in the genocidal extermination attempt of the Palestinian people. And those are not opinions, those are factual observations on the ground of what's actually happening. No one disputes that tens of thousands of Palestinian women and children and elderly and hospital patients and doctors and so on have been killed by Israel's government. No one disputes that, not any serious person anyway. And so we are faced with a situation where mass death is upon us. And how do we respond to this? How do we deal with this? Well, certainly we should not applaud the genocidal leader who is carrying out those actions. But let's start by stating our principles, shall we? At least I'll share mine. And I think that most of you listening to this will share most of these principles as well. And so principle number one is that all lives matter. And that means that we are all created in the image of God. We are all children of God. And that includes Jewish people. It includes Palestinian people. It includes those who practice Islam or Buddhism or Sikh religion or Hindu religion or whatever, or agnostics or even atheists, by the way, who are, of course, perhaps deceived. But even Satanists, by the way, Satanists certainly have been deceived. But when they were created, when the breath of life was breathed into them at the moment of their, well, I guess the actual breath would be at birth, but then the energetic breath, the spark of creation, would be at the moment of conception. But when that moment took place, they were expressions of the creation of God. Whether that baby went on to become a Satanist or a murderer or a rapist or someone of a different religion, you know, different from the one that maybe you practice, that is later. That does not take away from the fact that at the moment of their creation, they were created in the image of God. And from that principle, we understand that life matters and that every life has value. Now, the way that Netanyahu is running Israel and the IDF is to say that only Zionist lives matter, that no one else's lives matter, and certainly from their point of view, they don't think that Muslim lives matter or that Palestinian lives matter or that the lives of Gazans or, I mean, or Egyptians for that matter, or Syrians or whoever, they don't think that any of those lives matter, or Iraqis or Iranians and so on. So the philosophical foundation of Zionism is that Zionists were chosen by God alone, exclusively, they believe, to rule over earth, and that they alone have been granted the exclusive right to slaughter or murder any non-Zionist that they wish, and that they are justified in doing so by God himself. And this belief has been invoked numerous times by Netanyahu with stories about the Amalek, for example, and saying that the Palestinians are Amalek, which means they need to be slaughtered, including the women and children. This is a call by Netanyahu for the mass slaughter and genocide of the Palestinian people. And if we, you and I, if we are people with integrity, morality, and faith, or faith, you know, depending on what combination you may have of all those three, then we cannot stand by idly and watch this and remain silent. We have to call it out for the evil that it is. And we must speak out against those who are complicit in the arming of the Zionist military machine with more weapons to bomb more innocent women and children. And, you know, it's extraordinary that Netanyahu will say, I think he said this during his speech to the U.S. Congress, I think he said that they've killed something like 2,000 Hamas or something in that range. I forgot the exact number. And, of course, Congress gave a standing ovation. Yay, you killed 2,000 Hamas. But if you ask Netanyahu, well, so what about the other 40,000 people that you've killed? And his answer was at the speech that Israel killed almost no civilians whatsoever. And you're like, wait, what? Wait, what are you saying? What about the, you know, officially, in terms of the number of people who have been found, the bodies found and named, that number right now is right around 40,000 people, with some very reliable estimates, horrifying estimates, that there are at least twice as many still buried in the rubble because of all the bombing of residential buildings, apartment buildings, you know, multi-story residential homes. So there are probably at least another 40,000 buried under the rubble, maybe a lot more, and some of those will never be found. So we can say reliably 40,000 Palestinians have been killed by Israel, and very likely 80,000, and according to some recent studies, that number is well over 150,000, and some people believe it may be as high as 200,000 people, although that is conjecture at this point. It begs the question, does Netanyahu not recognize those lives as being human beings? And the answer is he doesn't, because he says they killed almost no civilians whatsoever. Well, then who are all those dead bodies? What about all those dead women and children? And the doctors that you shot dead in the hospitals, and all the hospitals that you bombed, and the mosques that you bombed, the refugee camps that you bombed, the elderly that you murdered, the food aid workers that you killed deliberately with missile strikes. Do you not count them? And if Netanyahu answers honestly, he would say, no, we don't count them, because in the point of view from Zionists, those weren't people. Those were animals. Those were Amalek, you see? So what kind of person can hold that kind of belief system involving the mass slaughter, the attempted ethnic cleansing, coordinated, deliberate, targeted mass murder of at least tens of thousands of civilians, and then stand before the United States Congress and say, we didn't kill hardly any civilians? What kind of person can do that? And I say the answer is a sociopathic murderer, someone who is beyond mentally ill, someone whose mind has been infiltrated with insidious evil, someone who haunts the chapters of history of our world alongside former horrendous, haunting, ghastly leaders like Stalin or Adolf Hitler or Chairman Mao or others. And then to have that person invited to speak before Congress, and then to have the vast majority of the members of Congress, not all of them, by the way, but the vast majority, stand up and applaud this satanic creature as he lied again and again and deceived and manipulated America and arm-twisted Congress into supporting an escalation of weapons to Israel so that they could bomb and kill more women and children, and so that they would be more easily led into a war with Iran, which is exactly what Israel has been wanting to engineer for a very long time, is war with Iran. To have members of Congress stand up and applaud that is absolutely sickening. And the world watched that in bewilderment. In fact, you recall the recent Olympics opening ceremony in Paris that made a mockery of Christ, a mockery of the Last Supper, a mockery of the church. Basically, you know, drag queens and transgenders pretending to be Christ's disciples. I have a question for you. Which scene was more offensive? That scene, the transgender drag queen Last Supper, or 80% of the U.S. Congress standing up and applauding a murderous, genocidal, sociopathic, political creature named Netanyahu? Because I see both of those scenes as equally disgusting, satanic, and ghastly. They are both pure evil. In one scene, it's drag queens and transgenders pretending to be Christ and his disciples. In another scene, it's men and women in suits and slacks pretending to represent the American people. But they are both blasphemy. And neither one of those is compatible with the honor, the integrity, and the faith of a true Christian or even a true Muslim. So that helps explain one of the first principles I wanted to share with you today, that I value all life on our planet, and I hope you share that with me. I believe that all lives have value, that all people are here for a purpose. A second important principle is the rejection of violence as a means to achieve your political or geopolitical or strategic goals. Israel uses violence as a first resort because it pays no price for doing so. Israel murders at will, bombs civilians, launches cruise missiles into cities of other countries. Israel slaughters women and children. It obliterates hospitals. It bombs water supply facilities and sewage treatment plants. Israel destroys infrastructure to cause mass death and suffering, disease. And it does so without consequence. This stance of the current leadership of Israel, which again, to be clear, does not necessarily represent all the people of Israel, although 80% of the Israeli people seem to support Netanyahu, but Jews around the world largely reject this, by the way. But to have a nation that exists with powerful weapons and powerful allies like the United States, and yet resorts to violence as its first choice, not a last resort, but it's first choice, that rejects diplomacy, rejects negotiations, murders the negotiators on the opposite side. This stance and these behaviors by Israel are wholly, grossly incompatible with human civilization. That if nations like Israel continue to operate in the same manner, that our world cannot survive. Humanity cannot survive. And thus, the approach of Israel is utterly incompatible with the survival of human civilization, especially when nuclear weapons are at stake. And with this understanding, if Israel is not stopped, then all of human civilization is threatened as a result. Now, I'm not the only one who has noticed this, of course. There are a great many critics, including many of us who are Christians, like myself, who are noticing this and pointing this out and daring to tell the truth, even at risk of being very harshly condemned, blacklisted, or censored, or accused of being, I don't know, puppets of Iran or something. That's so far from the truth, it's sickening. Rather, I am a true Christian, which means I genuinely support Christian values of honoring every human life as created in the image of God. I would say that those Christians who support what Israel is doing today are themselves fake Christians. They are inauthentic. They have abandoned their Christian principles. And by supporting Israel today, you are acting in contradiction to the teachings of Christ himself. Now, let me play a couple of short clips here from Larry Johnson, who has noticed many of the same things, and Larry speaks with a sense of boldness. Now, he's a former CIA analyst. I have interviewed him at least once, maybe twice. And what Larry has to say here is very important for us all to hear, and especially for our leaders to hear in this moment when we face escalation into World War III. So let's go to the first clip. Here we go.
You know, Israel gets to be the only country in the world outside of the United States that it can attack any other country at once and be not held accountable. You know, so it now bombs Beirut, bombs Lebanon, it bombs Syria, it bombs Iran, it bombs Iraq. You know, so you got to take the gun away from them. Israel's dangerous. Someone in the region has got to shut them down. But I fear the only way that's going to be done. I mean, what Israel has become is pure evil. They are as bad as the Nazis. They are raping male prisoners, Palestinians, using broomsticks, vegetables, and even themselves, you know, anal rape.
So what Larry Johnson was referring to there was the recent disagreement within Israel's military and court system. There was, well, some riots and, of course, a very fierce debate recently over whether it's appropriate for the Israeli military to rape Palestinian prisoners with painful objects to anally rape them, to sodomize the prisoners. So here's a nation, Israel, that claims to be acting on the orders of God and with the protection of God and with the authority of God, that is literally engaged in a debate of whether it is legally and morally appropriate to sodomize prisoners. Now, how do you reconcile those two ideas? Well, you can't. What Israel does to its prisoners is closer to Sodom and Gomorrah than any of the teachings of God or Christ, for that matter, if we want to go, you know, New Testament into Christianity. But the behaviors of modern-day Israel and what it is doing are the antithesis of the teachings of God. And yet, Israel has fooled itself into thinking that it is acting on behalf of God and has the exclusive authority from God to sodomize people, to murder, slaughter, to commit genocide, and to carry out mass death campaigns against its neighbors. That does not make for a friendly type of country. That does not make for a world in which we would want to live. And as I said earlier, Israel has proven that it is incompatible with human civilization, and that, well, and I would say that Israel's neighbors have already reached the conclusion that in their minds, they do not believe that Israel can be allowed to continue to exist. But let me play this other clip for you from Larry Johnson speaking about how Israel has violated its covenant with God. And I wholeheartedly agree with that assessment from Larry Johnson. So give this a listen.
You know, Israel is a genocidal society. And the people that support it are monsters, unfortunately. And, you know, it's important to note that this is not about Jews, because you have a number of honorable people, Jewish, who are speaking out, whether it's, you know, Max Blumenthal, Aaron Mate, Jeffrey Sachs, Norman Finkelstein. You know, there's not a silent majority, you know, they're speaking out. But the ruling authorities, the people that control the government, they're bloodthirsty, they're soulless. They violate every principle and tenet of what they claim is the religious foundation that they rely upon. And everything they're doing is actually a rejection of that covenant with God.
So there he said it, I think, accurately, that what Israel is doing, its leaders, is a rejection of its covenant with God. Now, I think it's very important to underscore the distinction that Larry Johnson makes here. He is not casting condemnation on Jewish people or people of Jewish faith all over the world, nor even every Israeli citizen. He is casting condemnation upon Israel's leadership and the genocidal overlay of modern Israeli society. And I believe that Larry Johnson is insinuating here that he would very much prefer that Israel, that the people of Israel reject the current leadership, the genocidal murderers like Netanyahu and Gvir and others, and instead have a form of representation that is not rooted in genocide and murder, but rather in peace and trade and coexistence with other nations in the region. And let me just add that that is my prayer for Israel, is that these genocidal leaders would be removed from power somehow. I don't know what mechanism is in place for that, but that they would be removed from power, that their control over Israeli society would be dismantled, and that the leadership of Israel, a new leadership, could emerge that is rooted in the principles of Judaism, which is not rooted in mass murder and genocide and war, at least it shouldn't be. But I'm talking about principles of peace and coexistence and getting along with neighbors and negotiating differences instead of just launching missiles and killing the negotiators. But it seems like Israel, its people, for the most part, are aligned with its current leadership. So I'm not sure what kind of miracle it would take to change that situation and bring Israel back to a nation with a kind of mindset that would be willing to act in a friendly, neighborly manner. I mean, even hearing myself say that is almost laughable. That's so far from what is possible, because under Netanyahu and the control of Zionists, Israel has become a murderous, genocidal, racist society, steeped in violence and hatred. I don't know how you change that. I'm not sure. I can pray for change, but I don't know the mechanism by which that were to happen. Now, I'd like to play one more clip for you from Larry Johnson, where he expresses extreme frustration about what Israel is doing right now, the number of people that Israel is murdering, the war crimes that have been carried out by Israel, Israel's rejection of the International Criminal Court, Israel's manipulation of the United States of America and the American voters and the American legislature, and so on. And in this clip, Larry Johnson questions whether Israel can even continue to exist as a nation given this track of behavior. So let's hear how Larry Johnson expresses that. Play clip number three.
You know, I can't believe sort of what I'm feeling now these days. I could never have believed that that time would come when I'd want to see the destruction of Israel. My own view is Israel should no longer exist as a nation. It should be wiped off the face of the earth. It's an abomination. It is, it's wanton murder of others. It is just, in my view, you know, evil. And they always try to project that it's Hezbollah and Hamas who are the terrorists doing all the killing. And I can show you the statistics compiled by the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs on its own website, details. How many Israelis have been killed in these, quote, terrorist attacks. And, you know, like Hamas in particular is mentioned in only just a fraction of, you know, less than 20%. So, and the total number of deaths for Israel over that 24-year period is less than 2,000 people. So we're not talking massive numbers. Whereas, you know, since October 7th, the Israelis have, you know, they're killing close to 50,000 Palestinians. Yeah, I mean, it's so disproportionate. It's really difficult to explain.
So there you heard Larry Johnson describe Israel as an abomination. And the reason I think it's important to include this clip is because this is the way, at least according to my understanding, monitoring a lot of international news sources, including sources from the Middle East, such as Middle East Eye, or reading Al Jazeera, or reviewing even RT from Russia, looking at news sources from China, and so on. Most of the world sees Israel in very much the same way that Larry Johnson just described. Most of the world sees Israel as an abomination, at least the current rendition of Israel under its current leadership. It doesn't mean that the whole world has always seen Israel that way, although I'm sure most of the countries in the Middle East have. I mean, Egypt has no doubt seen it that way since the 1960s, if not earlier. Jordan and Syria, for certain. Lebanon, of course. But most of the world actually agrees with the description that Larry Johnson just offered there. That's why I'm including this. Now, you listening to this, you may or may not agree with those words, and that's totally okay. Each of us is encouraged to arrive at our own conclusions, hopefully based on what's really happening and based on key principles. But most of the world agrees with what Larry Johnson just said. What's even more alarming about that is that most of the world also sees the United States as the most violent empire of the modern era. That, well, to say it this way, most of the world believes quite accurately that the United States empire is responsible for more violence around the world than any other nation, certainly since the end of World War II. Now, you can't blame the U.S. for the actions of Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich, although Western bankers did provide financing to Hitler, and we know that the computer company IBM, which stands for International Business Machines, by the way, that IBM provided early punch card computational devices or early computers to Adolf Hitler's Third Reich in order to track the systematic extermination of Jews. So IBM actually took part in the Holocaust by providing key technology, and you won't hear IBM talking about that today, that's for sure. You know, what Holocaust? What are you talking about? Yeah, they've been trying to memory hole that for generations. But most of the world sees Israel as a belligerent, irrational, violent bully of the Middle East, while seeing the United States empire as a global bully that bullies often with economic sanctions, dollar weaponization, cutting countries off from the SWIFT system, for example, like the U.S. did with Russia in 2022. And also exporting inflation from the U.S., printing dollars, now $35 trillion in debt, with hundreds of trillions of dollars in unfunded liabilities. By the way, the U.S. empire is broke. It's beyond broke. But it continues to be able to coerce, threaten, to bomb countries, to carry out economic sanctions, even against China right now. China is suffering under the economic sanctions of the U.S. empire. So this dynamic duo of Israel and the United States carries out the vast majority of violence and suffering in the world today, which is really saying something, especially given how much suffering there is in North Korea, for example, or in, you know, Cuba under too many decades of communism there, or even in China with the lack of freedom of speech and so on, the lack of freedom of religious expression that characterizes China. But that pales in comparison to the global suffering, destruction, and death that is currently being carried out by the U.S. empire. And many observers would go back even to the Vietnam War, and they would argue that the U.S. was once again involved in mass attacks on civilians there, and the dropping of Agent Orange chemical weapons, which cause untold human suffering and damage and ecological damage for generations. And then, of course, Desert Storm, the war against Iraq, then the war against Libya, the bombing of Libya, the killing, the murdering of Gaddafi, the war in Afghanistan, none of which the U.S. ever won, by the way. Don't you find that interesting? That the U.S. is really good at mucking around in international affairs and waging war, but not winning wars. I mean, look at what happened under the Biden administration as the U.S. military fled Afghanistan, just fled and left behind billions of dollars in military equipment. This disorganized route of fleeing the battlefield. I mean, it was just so characteristic of what the U.S. empire and, sadly, the U.S. military has become, which is largely a global terrorist organization at this point that simply inflicts terror upon the world. Basically saying, do what we say or we will bomb you. Do what we say or our CIA will run a revolution against your current president. Do what we say or we'll assassinate you. You know, like Trump was almost just assassinated. That's another CIA op, obviously, a deep state operation. Or do what we say or we'll economically sanction you. Do what we say or we'll cut you off from the SWIFT system. Or what they've said to Russia now, do what we say or we will steal all your deposits in Western banks. We'll just steal it. $300 billion in deposits owned by Russia, held in Western banks, mostly in Europe, and the European Union and the U.S. says, well, we're just going to steal that now because we can. We're just going to take it. You know, forget about the rule of law or what they call the rules-based order. There is no such thing other than the West declaring that we make the rules and we give the orders, and that's it. That's what rules-based order means. There are no principles that are held by the West. There are no universal rules. There is no integrity, no morality, no honesty, no promises are kept. Rather, what the West has become, both in the case of Israel and the United States, is nuclear-powered bullies engaged in terrorism, coercion, economic sabotage, mass death, and propaganda deception. That's the way most of the world now sees the West. And if you're hearing this and you haven't yet heard this before or you haven't realized this, then you're probably getting your news from Western sources that will never tell you this. But if you get your news from outside the United States and also outside of Western Europe, obviously, then this is exactly the story you're going to hear over and over and over again. And this is why, by the way, the rise of BRICS currencies is so incredibly popular. Because all these other countries around the world are tired of being sabotaged, punished, and sanctioned or economically blockaded by the West. And so they're building their own banking system, their own currency system, their own international settlement system. And did you hear that Russia just legalized the use of Bitcoin for international settlements? You know, Bitcoin had been outlawed in Russia for many years. And now Russia says, well, guess what? If you're exporting or importing, I mean, maybe you're exporting oil, you can get paid in Bitcoin, or you're importing machinery or whatever, you can pay in Bitcoin, and that's perfectly legal. And you know why? You know why Russia legalized Bitcoin? Because the West can't counterfeit Bitcoin. That's why. No nation can counterfeit Bitcoin. It's one of Bitcoin's most endearing properties that it cannot be counterfeited, not by any nation. And it's also no coincidence, by the way, that BRICS, with its new upcoming international settlement currency, which will reportedly be backed 40% by physical gold. There's a clue for you right there. This new currency is going to be run on a blockchain. Not a permissionless blockchain, by the way, like Bitcoin, but a permissioned blockchain. In other words, a redundant ledger, a distributed ledger system, where those nodes that run the ledger are pre-approved nodes, and those nodes would represent the various participants in the BRICS currency system. So there might be fewer than 100 nodes, and each node has permission. So that way, there can't be like a brute force, you know, computational work attack against the BRICS system. It is a permissioned node system, but it's based on blockchain. And it's based on the idea that no nation can counterfeit BRICS currency. When that gets rolled out, the Western counterfeit currencies, the dollar, which funds Israel, will be obsolete. The dollar has, it does not have much of a future. And I know I still hear people out there saying, no, the dollar is going to be good for, you know, 50 years. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Anybody holding dollars in 50 years is going to hold them as museum pieces. Like, look at this. Like, right now I can hold up a $10 trillion bill from, you know, Zimbabwe or whatever. You know, you can go online and you can buy real currency, hyperinflation currency from Yugoslavia or Zimbabwe or Argentina or even Weimar Germany or wherever. And I've got a collection of hyperinflationary currency notes. They're all real. One of them says $10 trillion. But I bought that bill with a bunch of other trillion-dollar bills for like 20 bucks. So in other words, they are worth nothing or near nothing. So the world is preparing right now for the collapse of the West. Understand that. That's probably the most important point of this podcast today. The Middle East is preparing for the destruction of Israel as we know it. Russia and China, Brazil and India and Turkey and other countries are preparing for the collapse of the U.S. empire. And they know that's going to happen. And by the way, if you know anything about China, and I do as I speak Chinese, and I lived in Asia, China plays the long game. The Chinese people, who are extraordinary people, by the way, I really, really admire Chinese culture and Chinese people. They have a very strategic long-term view. And the country of China, although I, of course, disagree with communism, I believe that all people all over the world should have the freedom of speech, you know, First Amendment protections, even Second Amendment protections, and so on. And that doesn't exist in China. But the country of China has a tremendous amount of patience. They are playing a long game here that is almost certain to find victory for China. For example, they have built naval yard capacity that is now known to be, documented to be 200 times larger than the shipyard or dry dock capacity of the United States of America. That's extraordinary. It means that in a time of war, China can outproduce the U.S. 200 to 1 in terms of ships. That matters. China makes long-term investments in technologies that are game-changing technologies such as AI or satellite-based submarine detection technology to see through the depths of the Pacific Ocean and to find submarines by their subtle magnetic signatures, which is you're like, how is that even possible? Well, that's the kind of tech that China invests in. Laser technology, we're talking about China will be rolling out naval vessels in the very near future with onboard solid-state lasers. And what I mean by that is, of course, the laser just is a continuous fire, and it just melts whatever it's pointed at. And the thing about lasers, why they're going to be such a game changer in naval warfare, is because lasers, of course, travel mostly in a straight line. And so light is hardly affected by gravity because it's traveling so rapidly. Now, technically, you may know that light actually is bent by gravity, but because light travels so rapidly, gravity has almost no time to affect it. So basically, anywhere on Earth or on the oceans, if you're a naval vessel and you can see the enemy naval vessel, you just point at it and you fire and you melt it. And you basically like melt a hole through the hull of the enemy naval vessel and it's done. So with lasers, China will be dominating the seas within the next, 15 years, if not sooner. But China is very forward-thinking in that way. Whereas the United States Navy has become, in many ways, the laughingstock of the world with all the transgender admirals and cross-dressers and drag queens and everything else, which sadly has now characterized elements of Space Force and Air Force and the Pentagon and the Navy. I don't know. Do the Marines? I don't think the Marines have a cross-dressing drag queen yet, but I'm sure it's right around the corner. God save the Marines from that, huh? If there's one branch of the military that we need to save from the LGBT agenda, it's the Marines. But we'll see. We'll see what happens. But the point is here that most of the world is now allied against the West, which means most of the world, that is most of the world's population, most of the countries, or I should say, most of the industrial output of the world, and also the majority of energy output countries are now wholeheartedly allied in opposition to the USA, the UK, and Israel. And I acknowledge this as an American. I don't say this with a sense of pleasure. I'm very saddened by this situation. I'm saddened by war. I'm saddened by human suffering. I'm saddened by tyranny or deception. I believe in the universal value of life. And I believe that if it were up to people like me, that our world could live in peace and prosperity and abundance, and that God has granted us all of these gifts. But it's Satan's forces that are now in control of the U.S. empire, the U.K. government, the deep state, MI5, the CIA, and Mossad and Israel. These are all run by Satanists. These Western leading countries represent a satanic death cult, and their goal is to interfere with human peace, prosperity, abundance, health, joy, freedom, all of the properties that represent what God wants for us. So it's become very, very clear that the UK, the US, and Israel are working for Satan. Oh, and of course, we have to throw in the government of Canada there. Don't forget Justin Castro Trudeau. As long as we're talking about Satanists, you got to throw Trudeau in the pack there. And of course, the governments of New Zealand and Australia are also answering to the same satanic agenda. Now, this doesn't mean that all the other countries in the world are on God's side. I'm not implying that. Clearly, the government of China does not believe in a Christian God like you and I might, or I don't know, some listeners might. Clearly, the leaders of Iran do not agree with the Western vision of God or Christ, although they do recognize the historical existence of Christ as a prophet, by the way, in the teachings of Islam. So that's interesting. So your average Iranian citizen actually is a greater believer in Christ than your average American, which says something, doesn't it? Russia, of course, welcomes all religions and has a very large Christian population. And Russia is currently flourishing, even though all these economic sanctions have targeted Russia. And of course, there are many countries and regions around the world that would love to see humanity set free, that would love to see more abundance and more trade. I know that India, for example, is very much attempting to achieve economic stability and peace with its neighbors, and also while struggling with its own domestic population growth issues, which spills over into infrastructure issues, food supply issues, and so much more. But you get the idea. Most of the people of the world want to live in peace and prosperity, but the Western governments, ruled by Satan, represent a satanic death cult that wants to destroy all that is good. And in order to do that, they're trying to provoke World War III. Now, before we get to our very controversial guest here today, I want to remind you to stay prepared. And I want to ask for your support. And I hope that you recognize, whether or not you agree with the content of my message today, I hope you recognize that I go to great lengths to operate with principles and a sense of integrity, and to stick to the principles as I understand them, which I believe are extensions of the principles that God wants us to follow. You'll notice that I'm never calling for the killing of anybody. I'm never celebrating the killing. I noticed there are a lot of Jewish Americans on Twitter who were absolutely jumping up and down and applauding. Even a lot of conservative influencers were just applauding the death of this Hamas political leader, Hanea. And they were saying, you know, good riddance. That MF-er should have been killed years ago. So happy that guy was killed. These are Jewish Americans who claim to be conservatives, claim to be people of faith. And here they are applauding the mass murder, or I should say the targeted murder of Hanea, who was supposed to be a negotiator for peace. This is sickening behavior, and I want you to know, I give you my word, but you know me by now, I will never do that. I will never applaud the death or the assassination of any political leaders, especially negotiators who are at least involved in the process of dialogue. I think that kind of response is childish. I think it is unethical. And I work every day, and you know, I'm doing 100 sermons right now over 100 days. And in today's broadcast here, I'll be sharing with you sermon number 5. I think it's 5 today's. Yeah, I think today's is 5. And in these sermons, I am invoking what I believe are the lessons from God that are ascribed in the Bible in every day's sermon. I quote scripture and I attempt to share what I believe are principles of Christian living, principles of preparedness, principles of preventing chronic degenerative disease by turning to the miraculous molecules of Mother Nature that God placed upon this planet for our benefit. And I believe that we can live in a world of peace and abundance if we can stop these murderous leaders. And I ask for your support. So if you want to support my mission here, whether or not you agree with my conclusions today, if you agree with my process of saying, let's stop killing each other, let's find a way to achieve peace, let's coexist on this planet, and let's help other people learn how to grow food and be healthier and get along with their neighbors. If you agree with those principles, shop with us at healthrangerstore.com. And there you'll find all kinds of amazing superfoods, supplements, and we've got our silver mouthwash products back in stock now that were not available for a period of time, but they're back in stock. Just shop at healthrangerstore.com. Check out our preparedness items. And also, if you want to see all the different discount deals that I've put together for you on lots of preparedness items, which will become incredibly important if this war escalates, then go to rangerdeals.com and just see the discount codes that we have available for you there from many different companies offering many different solutions. And please understand that by shopping with us at healthrangerstore.com, you do provide a source of revenue that helps us maintain our channels, our technologies, to give away so much for free, to fund the operations of Brighteon.com, Brighteon.social, which is our social media platform, as well as Brighteon.io, which is the uncensorable distributed social media content platform built on the Bastion backbone, which is running on nodes. It runs like blockchain, like Bitcoin. It's kind of like the Bitcoin of social media, you could say. Same structure, but it carries content instead of transactions of coins. So check that out at Brighteon.io, and thank you for your support. Now, with that said, we're going to bring in what I think will be a controversial interview. This is an interview with Dustin Nemos, N-E-M-O-S. He's from Nemos Network. And Dustin Nemos is a very vocal critic of Zionism. And for the record, I do not agree with all of his conclusions or assessments. I just want to be clear about that. I'm not endorsing what Dustin Nemos says in his interview. But I bring this in because Nemos is one of two people that I've interviewed who have done a lot of research. They are, in essence, sort of self-taught scholars on these issues, some issues regarding scripture or sometimes mythology and certainly history. And Dustin Nemos has come to a conclusion about the origins of Zionism that he believes explain why people like Netanyahu are such evil, malicious mass murderers and genocidal sociopaths. Now, I don't know all the things that he says about history. That's not my area of focus. But the reason I'm sharing this interview with you is because I think it's very important for us to understand how the world looks at Zionism from a non-Western point of view and why you're going to see so much retaliation, let's say, from Iran in response to Israel's recent cruise missile attack in Tehran. We need to be able to look at these issues from a non-Western point of view if we hope to understand what's happening. I think that most Americans are completely blinded. They're in the dark by media propaganda. They've been hoodwinked by Netanyahu into thinking that Israel is America's ally. Israel is not America's ally. Israel is like that really bad friend you might have had in high school that tried to drag you into the craziest, riskiest, most unethical things. And I don't know if you had a friend like that, but I had a friend like that. And I didn't keep him as a friend for very long. But, you know, this friend probably isn't even alive today. I would imagine he's probably dead by now. But he just went off the deep end and just started doing crazy things with cars and drugs and thefts. And it's like, okay, yeah, that's I'm not into that stuff. No, thank you. Israel is that. Israel's that crazy friend that wants you to smoke crack and, you know, pick up a rifle and just start shooting people or whatever. I mean, that's Israel. I mean, metaphorically speaking, Israel is the friend you don't want to have. Israel will get you into so much trouble. It will drag you into conflicts that you don't want and you can't handle. And Israel will get you clobbered. So far from being an ally, Israel is the troublemaker at America's side. Or you could say that Israel actually rules over America, which became apparent when Netanyahu got a standing ovation, or like 87 standing ovations from the United States Congress, which was a truly nauseating display. And wait, didn't Speaker Johnson introduce Netanyahu as His Highness or Your Highness? And I cringed at that because of the history of our country. We don't recognize royalty here in America. We fought a war to get rid of that. We fought a war so that we don't have to say Your Highness and bow down and kiss the ring of the corrupt king and whatever. We don't say Your Highness, Speaker Johnson. Get your head on straight, bro. We don't say Your Highness here. We say F-A-F-O, FAFO. Some people know what that means. That's what we say. We're Americans. We also say come and take it. We, you know, Speaker Johnson needs to realize what country he's living in, I think, or what planet he's on, because he's in some alternate universe, or he's just a little bitch of Netanyahu, I think, is the correct answer there. But it makes you wonder how many U.S. lawmakers are wrapped around the finger of Netanyahu, or twisted like the serpent around Netanyahu's demonic staff, right? I mean, these are very frightening things. Netanyahu united many Democrats and many conservatives in a way that no other issue and no figure in America could do. Isn't that wild? Like, there's more support for Netanyahu than there is support for just protecting our own border. That's blasphemy. That's crazy. We should have 100% of Republicans and Democrats saying, let's protect our border. We should have 100% of Democrats and Republicans saying, let's not mutilate children. But we don't. Instead, they mostly support a genocidal mass murderer. And that's what unites the most twisted members of the United States Congress. But it's sickening, right? It's sickening. So what Dustin Nemos brings to the table here, whether you agree with him or not, is potentially an outside view understanding of the way the world looks at Netanyahu and even the way the world looks at the West. So we're going to jump into that interview. And I just another disclaimer up front here. I absolutely do not endorse what Dustin Nemos says in this interview. I do not agree with his conclusions. I do not endorse his words. I bring him on to provide an alternative point of view that may help Americans and Westerners understand the way the rest of the world is looking at Israel right now, which may help us anticipate what other nations are doing. So I offer this conversation under the First Amendment protections of the United States Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Again, I do not endorse it, but I think this is an important point of view to hear right now, given the fact that Israel is about to drag us into a devastating, deadly, costly, and highly destructive regional war, if not a world war. So with that said, here's the interview, the controversial interview, sure to be censored, with Dustin Nemos. All right, so just in the interest of time here today, if you want to hear that Dustin Nemos interview, it's going to be posted separately. You can find it on Brighteon.com on my channel, HR Report. That interview would be very likely to be banned on X or anywhere else anyway, so it's just going to live on Brighteon.com. What I'm going to play for you here now today is the sermon, today's sermon, which I think you will find very informative and very valuable. It's sermon number 5 out of 100, so we are 5% of the way through all the sermons. Isn't that amazing? And this concerns Job chapter 34, verse 10. And I've entitled it God's Breath of Life and Satan's War on Carbon. And I think that you will really, really enjoy this. I think it's one of the better sermons. Maybe this is a 9 out of 10, let's say. Sermon number 1 was 10 out of 10. This is a 9 out of 10. I think it's very informative and very good. I think you'll learn a lot from it, and you'll get a lot of inspiration from it. So enjoy the sermon, and I'll have more sermons for you this weekend. Yeah, because it's one every day for 100 days. So enjoy. God bless you all, and thank you for listening. Here's what we've got back in stock right now at healthrangerstore.com. Check it out. We've got the toothpaste, the Groovy Bee brand toothpaste there that everybody loves, and we don't know if we're ever going to get any more because this is the toothpaste that the FDA Office of Importation tried to destroy, or tried to get us to destroy it for no reason. And then, of course, we had our lawyers talk to them, and then they released it and said, oh, oops, we made a mistake. So now we have Groovy Bee toothpaste here that is back in stock at the store. Trail mix that people absolutely love. Remember, everything is laboratory tested. Almost all the ingredients we have are certified organic. And we do extensive lab testing, testing for heavy metals and glyphosate, and for many of our products, also testing for aflatoxins. For everything, we test for microbiology, E. coli, salmonella, yeast, and mold, and so on. Check out our macaroni and cheese instant meals there. You just boil water, you put in the macaroni, which is made out of quinoa, amaranth, and organic rice, all organic ingredients. It's got a really great texture. And then the cheese powder sauce is with real organic powdered cream, real organic cheddar cheese powder, real organic butter powder, onion powder, and so on. It's the best macaroni and cheese you've ever had. Certainly the healthiest and cleanest. In addition, we've got quercetin supplements and our Seven Treasures mushroom blend, which is, of course, a combination of different functional mushrooms, including lion's mane mushroom, which is one of my favorite mushrooms because that's what I use, you know, after I severely lacerated my finger. But lion's mane, check out the website, by the way. Here's what lion's mane actually looks like growing in the wild. Pretty cool, right? We've got a lot of items here available now in stock, ready to ship out at healthrangerstore.com. And remember that all of your purchases help support this free speech platform to support our interviews, our investigations, and our broadcasts that bring you news and analysis every single day that you just won't find on places like YouTube, which are heavily censored. So thank you for your support. I'm Mike Adams of healthrangerstore.com. Take care.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
Welcome to today's sermon. This is Mike Adams, and we are continuing with 100 sermons in 100 days. And today, we've got something really special for you. We're talking about breath and air. We're talking about God's molecules in the atmosphere, including the molecule of life, which is carbon dioxide. And we're going to get into this in a very interesting way, which is from the book of Job. And the book of Job, I find to be one of the most fascinating books in the Bible. And the book of Job, as you know, it's about the debate over whether God issues out judgment correctly in the world. Like, God's running the whole world, and yet this man, Job, he is suffering apparently for no good reason. He believes he is innocent, and yet he has been made to suffer. And he is questioning God directly. He is even accusing God of either not being just or not being in control of the world. And of course, there are other wise men around him trying to answer these questions, including Elihu. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, but who knows? Some of these names are difficult for Westerners to pronounce. But Elihu, E-L-I-H-U. Elihu is speaking to Job in verse 10 of Job chapter 34. So 34:10. And he's saying the following, quote, "So listen to me, you men of understanding. Far be it from God to do evil, from the Almighty to do wrong." He's saying God cannot do evil. And he's speaking to these wise men who are trying to explain things to Job, and Job is suffering and wondering, you know, what's going on? Why isn't God treating me correctly? Elihu goes on, he says, he repays everyone for what they have done. He brings on them what their conduct deserves. It is unthinkable that God would do wrong, that the Almighty would pervert justice. Who appointed him over the earth? Who put him in charge of the whole world? If it were his intention, and he withdrew his spirit and breath, all humanity would perish together and mankind would return to dust. I find this to be a very powerful passage right here. It's poetry, actually, in the original text. But it's saying that regardless of what you think of God's judgment and how he dishes it out to people based on their deeds, in the big picture, it is God's breath of life that brings animation to all of us and all living creatures and beings and plants on this entire planet and perhaps beyond, that without God's breath of life or God's spirit, which sometimes, of course, in the Bible, breath and spirit are used interchangeably, and I think there's a reason for that, which I'll get into. But without God's spirit and breath, then we would all collapse into just dust. In other words, we would be nothing more than the physical materials, the proteins, the molecules, the minerals. Because, you know, physically, that's what the body is. It's just all these minerals and calcium and magnesium and water, you know, and creating then red blood cells and tissue and tendons and what have you. But without God's animating spirit and breath, you'd just be a pile of molecules. And it reminds me, a few years back, I saw some kind of science meme that was saying that an orange is nothing but all these chemicals, and it listed all the chemicals that are in the orange. You know, here's D-limonene for this, and here's, you know, like fructose, and it was like 25 chemicals, and they have very, you know, crazy chemical sounding names. And the meme was trying to say that chemicals aren't bad, and oranges are nothing but chemicals, and food is nothing but a bunch of chemicals. But it isn't, is it? Because if you went out and bought all those chemicals by themselves, and you got little bags of each one of those chemicals, and then you took all those chemicals and then you poured them into a pile, let's say, little pile, would you have an orange? The answer is no, you don't have an orange. Why? Because all those chemicals are not organized through God's vision of creation of what an orange should be. And so an orange is also blessed with the spirit and the breath of God. An orange is a living thing when it's on the orange tree, and the tree itself is a living thing. It says you are a living thing. And so it's only with God's spirit that these so-called chemicals or components or proteins and molecules and minerals and whatever, that they become an organized system of life. And that's what science misses, by the way. Science thinks that you can break down a living being into all of its components and constituent parts. And if you can name all those parts, then you understand the being. And that's nonsense. You have no understanding of the being just by looking at all its parts. And there's a, I think, a pretty famous philosophical metaphor in all of this, which would be if you dissected a grand piano and you took all the piano parts and pieces and separated them. Oh, here's the white keys versus the black keys and the piano strings and the wood, you know, and the legs and everything about the piano. If you dissected it, where would you find the music? You know, where is Mozart in this piano pile of parts, you know? Well, there's no music in those parts, is there? Because the music is the animating spirit, or the breath that is expressed through the physical components of a piano, just like your soul, your mind, your consciousness, that is the animating spirit that is expressed through the physical body. Yes, you have hands and feet, and you can move your limbs around, and you can move your lips, and you can speak, and you can open your eyes and see, and what have you. And I mean that literally, not metaphorically. But without the animating spirit inside, you are nothing but a pile of dust. And that is what Elihu is saying here, that if God were to withdraw his intention, if he withdrew his spirit and his breath, that all of humanity would perish together and mankind would return to dust, because there is no life without his intention and his spirit coursing through us. Now, importantly, God's spirit and breath is expressed through us and through our world through molecules. I mean, that's one of the ways. And we've spoken about other molecules that are healing molecules in the world of foods and nutrition and superfoods, neuroprotective molecules, cardioprotective molecules, hepatoprotective molecules, and so on. Some molecules protect your skin, your joints, your bones. Other molecules protect your eyesight, such as carotenoids, for example. And of course, there are antioxidants that protect you against genetic mutations that threaten the genetic code of humanity, which is a reflection of God, of God's intent, you know, God's blueprint for you. The genetic code is a reflection of God's intention. So now we have to look at then molecules outside of our body and outside the food supply, and this gets us to air, which is very closely tied to the idea of the breath of God, because the breath of God extends to the entire ecosystem of plants. And without plants, of course, we would all die. I mean, think about it, without forests, without food crops, without farms, without whatever, you know, grasslands. And I mean, how would other animals get their food if not for the plants? And there are plants in the ocean, of course, that also rely on photosynthesis and carbon dioxide in order to grow and thrive, and that feeds the marine ecosystem that gives life to the ocean. So when you study atmospheric sciences or atmospheric chemistry, you realize that carbon dioxide is the molecule of life. It is the miracle molecule that represents the breath of God. And then very quickly, you begin to realize that those who oppose carbon dioxide are admittedly themselves, they say they're at war with carbon. We are made of carbon. We are carbon-based life forms. Food crops are made of carbon. Animals are made of carbon. Trees are made of carbon. And you even see now the green climate groups cutting down trees and burying them and saying that's good for the planet, like cutting hundreds of thousands of acres of trees, saying that they are sequestering carbon because they're at war with carbon. And they're at war with carbon dioxide, which is the miracle molecule provided by God. And this is not a coincidence. So the climate agenda is opposed to the breath of life and the miracle molecules of God. The climate agenda is rooted in Satanism. That's right. The destruction of life on Earth, the destruction of the ecosystem, the destruction of humanity, the destruction of the food supply, of the plants and animals and everything that is on God's green earth, everything described in Genesis that God created, the climate agenda is trying to destroy. Now let's back up a little bit and cover photosynthesis and the miracles of God and creation and the breathing of life into plants. So photosynthesis, from a straight up science perspective, has three inputs. You probably already know this, but it's sunlight, it's carbon dioxide, and it's water. Now, isn't it interesting that, you know, sunlight, warmth, light, illumination, energy, you know, solar panels collect sunlight, obviously turn it into electrical voltage and, well, wattage and amperage as well. But in plants, when they combine carbon dioxide with water, then the sunlight creates bioenergy or botanical energy, essentially forms of sugars for plants to power the plant physiology. And then from that, the plants are able to synthesize all the amazing molecules that we've talked about before, including nutritional molecules, neuroprotective molecules, medicines. Natural medicines are created by plants from sunlight. So if you've ever wondered, and where do all these nutrients come from that I'm talking about that are God's miraculous nutrients? They are made from light. And how fitting is that? The light of God. God created the cosmos. God created the rules of physics, the laws of physics that allow hydrogen and helium to produce through fusion excess energy to have a giant glowing ball of fire in the sky and radiation that is taken up by the plants and turned into medicine. Isn't that amazing? But in order to make that happen, you have to have CO2. Now, those who oppose God and who oppose humanity, which is the climate agenda pushers today, they want to eliminate all carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and they are building large-scale projects that are called carbon sequestration projects that are designed to achieve exactly that. They are, in essence, sucking carbon out of the air and then pressurizing it into a liquid and then pumping that liquid through pipelines and storing it underground in order to deprive the world's forests and food crops and grasslands of that very important carbon dioxide. And this will reduce photosynthesis, and it will reduce food crop production. And even mainstream science organizations like NASA admit that slightly rising levels of carbon dioxide over the last century or so are greening the earth. More carbon dioxide means more greening. You have deserts that are becoming so green now that many of the climate agenda pushers are suddenly screaming that we have to save the deserts because the deserts are being turned into grasslands and forests in some cases. And so they're panicking over the disappearing deserts. You would think that transforming deserts into something that would grow food would be a positive thing, but, you know, not in the view of those who are Luciferians and who seek the destruction of all life on Earth. They love deserts because they're mostly dead. In addition, this is really important to understand, the climate pushers also, they're at war with the liquid phase of water. Now, you may remember this from high school science class or wherever you first learned this, but for most materials, there are three common phases, and then there's a plasma phase on top of that, but we're not going to focus there. But the three common phases are solid, liquid, and gas. And so water exhibits these phases in very familiar forms. So as a solid, water is ice. You add heat to it, it becomes liquid. It melts, it becomes liquid, and then you have water. You add more heat to it, and you have steam or water vapor. It goes into a gas phase. And if I were to ask you a very simple question, which of these three phases is conducive to life on Earth? Think about it. Which phase, solid, liquid, or gas, promotes plants and food crops and dolphins and human beings? And, you know, it's obvious. It's the liquid phase. So when water is present, then you can have life on Earth. The carbon-based life form requires liquid water. Well, what phase do the climate pushers hate? They hate the water phase. They despise liquid water, and they're always fretting about it, saying there's too much liquid water because the ice is melting, they say. And, oh my goodness, the oceans might be rising a little bit. There's too much water on this planet, they say, and they think it's going to destroy the world. So what do they want? They want ice, the dead form of H2O, because you can't plant crops in ice, can you? And you can't irrigate crops with ice. And if you have ice, you don't have liquid oceans and rivers and streams where you have bountiful life of all the creatures of the sea and all the fish in the rivers and in the lakes and ponds and what have you. None of that is possible if it's ice. And that's why the Luciferian climate agenda pushers, they love ice and they despise liquid water. So they're actually at war with a phase of H2O. They're at war with the liquid phase because that's the phase that promotes life. At the same time, they are, of course, at war with carbon dioxide, which I call it God's molecule in atmospheric chemistry, because carbon dioxide, of course, makes photosynthesis possible. And without carbon dioxide, we would not have plants or crops or rainforests or trees. By the way, do you know that with higher levels of carbon dioxide, you also get more flowers in the rainforest? And the flowers are very useful for pollinators. So higher levels of CO2 are very good for the planet. It results in more green areas. The deserts shrink. You get more flowers, more rainforests, expansion of grasslands, and you get more pollinators. So the insect biomass, which is really critical for the ecosystem, actually increases with higher levels of CO2. So those who are at war with CO2 are at war against pollinators and honeybees and bumblebees and what have you. They're at war against God. They're at war with life on Earth. They're at war with humanity. And again, they admit it blatantly. They say they are at war with carbon. It's a war on carbon. Those are their words. And a war on carbon is a war on carbon dioxide and a war on carbon-based life forms such as you and I. So when they say they are at war with carbon, you should believe them. They are admitting that they are Luciferians. They are on the side of Satan. Now, there may be some members of the climate agenda who, in their minds and hearts, they might at first believe that they are trying to save the planet. But if those people exist, they have been deceived and they have failed the test of discernment. If your activities are designed to save the planet and green the planet, then why are you eliminating the molecule that makes the planet green, right? It makes no sense whatsoever. And it shows how deceptive Satan can be by recruiting loads of people to try to destroy the planet and destroy life as we know it on this planet, and yet tell them that they are saving the planet. And then they talk about a climate emergency and that humanity is the problem. So all of God's children are to blame, they say, for this so-called climate emergency. And then they begin to advocate things like depopulation, abortion, euthanasia, and other forms of murdering God's children, which they think will bring the planet back into balance. And I say, beware of any movement whose final solution relies on the mass killing of fellow human beings. That's probably not a good group to follow. Now, getting back to Job, which again, I find to be really fascinating, and we'll discuss it in other sermons, no doubt, just because of the philosophical implications of what's being talked about in the book of Job. But when the scripture says that if God withdraws his breath, that all life on earth would fall into dust, I believe that God's breath is expressed through chemistry, that all the laws of chemistry and physics are representations of God's will or God's animating spirit, God's gift of consciousness and life, which is something that science cannot quite define. Because, again, as I mentioned earlier, scientists can break down life forms into their constituents and components, but science still can't define life or even recreate it or reorganize it in the way that God can. Now, once we realize that carbon dioxide is the miracle molecule of the atmosphere, and then we realize that the atmosphere is Earth's lungs, so the atmosphere is involved in respiration. The atmosphere is exchanging air and molecules with all the living beings on the planet, humans, animals, plants, ocean creatures, and so on. So if we think that the lungs of the earth are the atmosphere, then when God is breathing life into the earth, going back to Genesis and creating everything on earth, then we realize that the breath of God, the spirit of God, must include carbon dioxide, because historically, carbon dioxide has existed on planet Earth at significantly higher levels than where it is today. In fact, in the history of Earth, according to ice cores and even according to mainstream science, carbon dioxide was, at some periods, way more than 10,000 parts per million, and even higher, significantly higher, and today it's barely above 400 parts per million. Our planet would look more lush, more green, we would have more water, we would have, instead of deserts, we would have food crops and abundant farms and natural abundance all over the planet in almost every area. including in many barren areas today of Africa or the Middle East or parts of East Asia that have suffered from a lot of desertification over many years. Carbon dioxide levels rising is a great gift to life on Earth. And in fact, it will increase rainfall in many areas as the oceans are slightly warmed. Warmer oceans result in more evaporation of water, which results in more rainfall inland in the continents in areas that currently suffer from very, very dry climate conditions that, of course, are not conducive to, you know, growing food crops or even living in some cases. And it's very clear that there are times in Earth's past when the environment was much more lush, it was more green, it was more abundant. And if you're wondering, for example, about the fossil record, it shows that in many areas, it's very clear that the ocean was much, much higher in the past. Why are there ocean fossils, you know, 50 feet above current sea level? Or why are fossils of ancient creatures like the dinosaurs, why do they show that these dinosaurs lived in areas that were very lush and green and abundant in natural flora, even though the places where those bones are found today appear to be very dry, near desert conditions? And the answer is quite clear, again, because carbon dioxide was much higher in Earth's past. And if it were to return to much higher levels, then Earth would be far more abundant in terms of food and being able to support life and having natural rainfall, which helps, of course, irrigate crops and so on. So if the atmosphere is Earth's lungs and God is breathing life into Earth, then he breathed carbon dioxide into the atmospheric chemistry as the molecule of life. And in every breath that we inhale, by the way, we also inhale that same carbon dioxide. We don't use it, however. We exhale the carbon dioxide. And in fact, we exhale extra carbon dioxide because, of course, we inhale oxygen, exhale more CO2 than what we inhaled. And then that CO2 is able to be used by plants. And then plants, of course, take in the CO2 and then they give off oxygen, which means they're keeping the carbon. So what are the plants doing with the carbon that they're keeping? This is critical to understand. The carbon becomes the nutrients. Because if you look up, what is vitamin C? Vitamin C consists of only three elements: carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. CHO. And there's a website you can go to called chemspider.com, C-H-E-M, like chemistry, chemspider.com. And you can enter there any molecule that you want, like vitamin C or ascorbic acid, or you can put in, you know, an antioxidant you want, or enter astaxanthin or what have you. And what you're going to find is that all the healing nutrients, the miraculous medicines found in plants, created through God and Mother Nature in order to help humanity to be well and to be abundant and to be cognitively alert and to have healthy fertility and healthy children and to reproduce and to populate this earth, all of those molecules are made out of carbon. It's the same carbon that you exhaled. It went into a plant, that plant used the carbon, and it built its own structures. It built its stems and roots and leaves. It built its fruit or seeds or pollen or whatever it is, whatever kind of herb or fruit tree or nut or whatever it happened to be. It used carbon to build those structures. And then that carbon became medicine. You see how amazing this is? The miracles of God and Mother Nature expressed through plants using carbon dioxide to engineer powerful medicines. And this is why, again, the climate agenda, or those who are part of the climate cult, they oppose carbon because they are not about natural medicine or God's medicine. They are all about synthetic man-made medicine. That's why they promote pharmaceuticals and vaccines and bioweapons, designed to achieve depopulation and extermination of humanity. They're at war with carbon. They're at war with liquid water. They are at war with the atmosphere, the lungs of the earth. And they are at war with God. And we need to be bold on this point. There is no person who can be in alignment with the teachings of God and Christ who is also at war with carbon. For the reasons I have explained here, carbon is essential to the flourishing of life and medicine, abundance and health on this planet. So anybody who says they're in favor of carbon sequestration, they might as well be admitting that they are working for Satan, that that's their mission. They're trying to destroy life on Earth. And many of them claim to be driven by science. Yeah, the same science that pushed the vaccine jabs that are rooted in depopulation and mass extermination and infertility and stillbirths and spontaneous abortion and all these other things that happened after the jabs were widely distributed. So it's not a surprise. Those who promote death to humanity, yes, they are also at war with carbon. It's perfectly aligned with their anti-life, anti-human, anti-God belief systems. So when they tell you who they are, believe them. They are at war with God because they are on Satan's team, and Satan will not prevail because God's miracles cannot be defeated. So if you're on the side of carbon dioxide and the side of life, you're on the side of God and God's intention for this planet. Thank you for tuning in to today's sermon. I'm Mike Adams. I hope you learned something and gained inspiration from this talk. We have many other sermons that can also provide you with words of wisdom and inspiration, I believe. So be sure to check all of those out at the same place where you found this sermon. God bless you all. I'm Mike Adams. Take care.